The lights are on red. We're away.
Hello and welcome to MotoGPOD, the internet radio show all about motorcycle road racing. My name is Jim Race, I'm your host, I'm filling in for Bob Hayes, and this is episode number 67. So I was trying to think about what to talk about this week. Frankly, it's been a really quiet week. We had a race last weekend and that went pretty well, and it was kind of exciting to watch. And this week, I guess, has been pretty good. Can't think of a whole lot new that's going on. There was some practicing this morning. Something's coming to mind. It's almost like I'd hear something that's going on. What is that? What the heck? Of course there was stuff going on. Oh my God, the sky is falling. Or the sky has fallen several times. This guy fell. That guy fell. Four other guys fell. Another guy fell today. Oh my gosh, this has been an incredibly insane week. If I've never seen the Grand Prix wars, at least in recent memory, turn so topsy-turvy in such a short period of time. Well, what did we have? Last week's Catalunya Grand Prix. Let's do a little bit of a rundown on that, and that'll get us started, and before you know it, it'll be the Aston race will be on, and I'll be talking all the way through it, and you'll just stop this. So, hang on a minute, let's do our recap. All right, so last weekend, Catalunya, started off relatively mellow. Qualifying was good. I'm not going to run through all the qualifying. I will run through what the grid was, and I'll take it from there because that's where the excitement really kicked in. First row, Rossi, Hopkins, and Kenny Roberts Jr. Right there, you knew things were going to be weird. Hopper in second, Kenny Roberts Jr. with fantastic performance. Rossi's lap time was incredible, and both Hopper and Jr. were down below the previous fast lap. Second row, Vermeulen, Nakano, Caparossi. Third row, Hayden, Stoner, and Melandri. That's got top nine. Row four, Depuñet, Pedrosa, and Edwards. Still sounding weird, right? Next row, Givernau, Elias, and Tomata. Something kind of weird there. Down in the bottom, Checa, Hoffman, Ellison, and Cardoso. So, that's pretty normal. Nothing really strange there. You know, we're like, okay, this sounds like a good GP. Rossi had a good qualifying effort. We've got some wild cards up top there. Hopper, we got Hopper up there. We've got Kenny Roberts Jr. on the front row. Wow, you know, absolutely stellar performances from both of those guys to be on the front row. Vermeulen's back. Nakano right up there. The usual guys, Caparossi, Hayden, Pedrosa all the way back in row four, Colin Edwards also back in row four, Givernau way back in five. So it starts off a mixed up race. Well, what happens when you start off a mixed up race? Some guys probably didn't qualify as well as they should have ran. Some guys are going to try and, you know, get right up there to the front, you know, get into that first corner and let's get this thing started. And the flag dropped, and that's what happened. Everybody got into the first corner, and from the slow motion replays I've seen, this is where the carnage starts. It looked like Caparossi was on the inside, maybe about two-thirds of the way back through the pack, may not have gotten a great start. He started to swing just maybe a foot over to the outside to get a little bit better line through the corner. People may argue with me about all this, and feel free to. race@motogpod.com. And it looked like just as he made that slight move to the outside that Givernau was coming up on his left-hand side. And in doing so, Givernau with a little bit more speed, or maybe a lot more speed. And by then, everybody's doing, I'm guessing, probably close to probably a good bit over 100 miles an hour. Maybe buck 25, who knows. Givernau came up on the back of Caparossi, and it was pretty much evident to me that his front brake lever slammed in the back of Caparossi's bike, probably straight back into the exhaust. Well, what happens when that happens? The front tire instantaneously locks up. The bike endos, is known all over the world. The front tire locks up, bike goes straight forward up in the air, and Givernau makes a spectacular unintentional flying leap through the air right into the middle of the pack. And that started a massive, massive chain reaction of riders and bikes. Givernau landed in the middle of this pack, Caparossi went down shortly thereafter. They started picking up riders because now they're going straight and all the riders are turning into the corner. In that same melee, we saw out Pedrosa with Caparossi's helmet. It actually, it looked like Caparossi's head was stuck between Pedrosa's back tire and Caparossi's bike. We saw Casey Stoner get taken off. We saw Marco Melandri taken off with some pretty good violence. We saw, I believe it was Randy DePugne, one of the Kawasaki's, my apologies for not remembering. We saw John Hopkins get shunted off. Just a big, big, huge mess of bikes. And if you haven't seen the pictures from that, if you haven't seen the race, if you've been under a rock, my apologies for giving any of this away, but it was one of the scariest accidents that I've ever seen in GP. It had the potential to be much worse than it turned out. Caparossi. So everything comes to a stop. There are bikes and bodies everywhere. The rest of the pack gets away relatively cleanly. Some guys had just puttered off. Some guys tried to pull it out and they just crashed. But there were some guys that went down really, really hard. And so Caparossi, knocked out, clean knocked out, bad crash. Gibernau, bad looking crash. And indeed, he suffered injuries. Marco Melandri, same thing. Those three guys took the brunt of it. Danny Pedrosa had what looked like a really good crash, but he... he's still like a boneless kid, and he managed to pop back up for that, get back into the race. So those three gentlemen took some time to get that cleaned up. They actually had the entire pack go around and did not throw the red flag until start finish, which surprised me a bit because that's maybe 100 yards before that corner and there were still people laying all over the place. So we're not even a lap in yet. Oh, boy. And we've got a good portion of the field taken out. A lot of these guys, or many of these guys, managed to get back into the battle on their B-bikes. Danny Pedrosa, Casey Stoner, Randy DePugne, who I can't think off the top of my head. I believe he was the one that was out there. My apologies if I'm incorrect. A lot of these guys made it back in and managed to get going again, despite a very severe and scary looking crash. So, second start, they get out there, and Chris Vermeulen's bike, and unfortunately I haven't seen this is hearsay or reading it on the interweb, Chris Vermeulen's bike would not start. And in the process of trying to get it started, Shinya Nakano's bike overheated. And he sprinted back to get his B bike, I believe. I don't believe he was involved in that first crash. And grabbed the bike, went back out, and gridded straight up, or went out in the I wish I knew this for sure. Please bear with me. The bottom line is he gridded up where he wasn't supposed to. When they made their third start attempt, which everybody got off, and everybody got off cleanly, as it turned out, he had gridded in a spot that he wasn't supposed to. And shortly thereafter, after ignoring the meatball flag for a bit, or the black flag to do a stop and go, he was black flagged from the race and excluded from the results. So that was too bad for Shinya. So what happened in our third start? Casey Stoner, off to the races, gets a brilliant start, much as he did, I might mention, in the first start, and takes off like wildfire. And what happens, we've got a bunch of Americans up front. We've got Rossi back in sixth, and so you got Stoner, you've got American, Rossi, the line on back. And it was a fascinating battle to watch because Rossi had gotten a poor start. Remember, he was still on pole and was stuck behind a lot of guys that would traditionally be thought of as slower than him. So we've got, once again, we've got Stoner out front, we've got Pedrosa, who is moving up through the field as well. In fact, I believe he was in front of Rossi right then. Running through the laps on lap, I believe it was 9 or so, Pedrosa goes down. And so he is down, and he's down hard, and he is out of the race. About 3 laps later, Stoner in the lead, Stoner goes down. And that's when we've got this Rossi still working his way through the Americans, I believe, He was close to the front. Hayden might have already gotten around Hopkins at that point. This doesn't sound too good, but see, the best part is that I've got more to go. You're not thinking that right now, are you? So, the bottom line, Rossi manages to make it through all the Americans. Nicky Hayden, with not the best start himself, manages to get up to second place. And at the end of the race, we're looking at Rossi, first place, Hayden in second, who has a great string of podium finishes. I'm not sure how many that is now. We've got to be getting close to double digits. And for the first time in a long time, and hats off to him and hats off to Team Roberts, is Kenny Roberts Jr. On the box again. It's been, I believe, 4 years, so great for them. The one gentleman that probably wanted it even worse was John Hopkins in fourth place. And he gave Roberts a real good run for his money up until about two laps to go, and Kenny, with his guile and wisdom of the years, put his head down, cranked out a bunch of quick laps, and managed to put some distance between himself and Hopkins. In the end, Hayden was 4.5 seconds back from Rossi. Another 5 seconds back from Hayden was Roberts Jr., and in those just last few laps, Roberts Jr. had gotten about 4.5 seconds or so from Hopkins. So it was relatively spread out at the front. You could see Nick Hayden, once he realized that Rossi was on a mission, said, okay, I'm not going to beat Rossi today, but, you know, he's with Caparossi out, of course, and he did not restart the race. Neither did Gibernau, neither did Melandri. Those three took the brunt of the blows. Hayden's position, if he took second, put him 20 points ahead of Caparossi, who he'd been tied with at that point. So a great achievement for Hayden in the points, a great achievement for Rossi to get two races in a row under his belt as the winner and get back in the thick of things. So the rundown was Rossi, Hayden, Roberts Jr., Hopkins, Edwards. In sixth place was Chris Vermeulen, a good run for him. Makoto Tomata, Carlos Checa, James Ellison, Alex Hoffman, and Jose Luis Cardoza. Pedrosa, Elias, Stoner, and Depunier went down during the race. Not starting in the restart was Gibernau, Melandri, and Caparossi. And black flag during the race was Shinya Nakano. So you had a whole bunch of guys that were unable to finish that race. You had 19 starters, and you had 11 total finishers. Good for some of the guys that have not been getting points. Those will matter at the end of the year, and those will matter when it comes time for salary negotiation and for building your resume for a team. So quite a thing. And we're all there at the end of the race after watching that crash. That was my hands clapping. Think to ourselves, well, what about next week? What are these guys, what kind of shape are these guys in? Gibernau, Melandri, Caparossi, remember, all three of those guys beat to heck. All three of them taken to the hospital. As we learned after the race, good old Lucky Sede Gibernau, and God bless the guy, in the ambulance on the way to the hospital, the ambulance hit a truck, knocked him off. And so he cannot catch a break. And you got to say that in front of his home crowd in Catalonia, with both Gibernau and Pedrosa going out, that wasn't the Catalonian fans' best day or happiest day. Nonetheless, Rossi got a heck of a hand from the Spanish fans. So good for them for that. But Gibernau, Melandri, Caparossi, what's going to happen? Caparossi, you know, remember, he came into this race and he was tied with Hayden in points. Now he's 20 down. Can he get back? Well, we'll talk about that next. So, what happens after a race like that where everything goes wrong pretty much all at once right at the beginning, and you pretty much sit there in stunned silence throughout the race wondering what's happened to the guys that you love to watch every week? The internet forums that I frequent are all just, you know, they're all going nuts. My good friends and cohorts at the site that I work on, rideon2.com, was full of speculation and wonderment, and, you know, we're looking all over the place trying to find some information. And I became reacquainted with one of my GP heroes this week, especially, not a rider in particular, not anybody on the team, but Dr. Claudio Costa of the Clinica Mobile, a gentleman and a fine doctor who has been with the Grand Prix race series and races since pretty much the dawn of the modern GPs and far, far back. If you haven't read his book, it's fantastic. And he treats his patients and his work and the series itself with a very lovely Italian philosophical style and great dedication. And I found out he had a website, didn't even know. And it was full of excellent information this week, and is full of it, and I mean that in the best way, at this very moment, and I'm still getting information. So I hit that first thing once I heard about it, and he was talking about Caparossi, what happened to him. That he was the primary person we were worried about. Some of you may remember Caparossi's accident at Phillip Island last year, when he badly injured his lung at the Australian GP. Well, that same injury was re-injured at this particular race, as well as a new abdominal injury. And the blow that he took, apparently, besides his noggin, to his chest, was extremely severe. And he was airlifted from Catalunya. The other two gentlemen, Melandri and Gibernau, went out by ambulance. And as we can see, that's not always the best way out. 50-50 chance of getting there safely. So Gibernau, taken care of by Dr. Costa. Moving on, Melandri suffered a chest injury as well as getting knocked out. He came to pretty quickly. He received something called a cervical rachis sprain, a contusion dislocation of his left shoulder collarbone. Translation, he bent his collarbone. He didn't, kind of bent it and it moved a little bit, but it didn't quite bend too bad. On the other hand, Sete Gibernau also got a head injury with a nice concussion, but he re-broke his collarbone. Well, he didn't re-break his left collarbone. It's hard to necessarily re-break something that already has a titanium plate on it, but a relatively common injury to a re-injured collarbone with a plate on it, and those of you that are queasy don't think about this, is that you actually bend the plate. This was a titanium plate, and the plate itself was bent. That doesn't do comfortable things to your bones, to your muscles, nor to anything in that area. And from the racers that I know in my local club, who are normally treated by Dr. Ting, who is also a world-famous sports surgeon and whatnot, it's not that uncommon to have your plate, your existing plate, your new or your bent up plate removed and have a new titanium plate put in. So those were the deal there. And it continues to go on. Melandri, on I believe the 20th, that would be two, three days ago, was discharged from Catalunya General Hospital, took a flight from there, from Barcelona to Assen, where his intent was to, and still is, to race the race this Saturday. Contusions, injuries, concussion, all that stuff. He took a flight from Barcelona to Assen. He took a train to Assen, and he went straight into his motorhome. He went to the Clinico Mobili, looking for more information. So that was Marco on Tuesday. On Wednesday, Caparossi shows up with a big smile. They took another look at him to see if he was going to be able to race. They said that they will give them an opportunity to race. And as I move into what occurred today, both Caparossi and Melandri did manage to get on track today. So we had news all throughout the week. We had some information. The one thing that we definitely knew wasn't going to happen would be that Gibernau was not going to be able to race. So Gibernau, what happens with that? One of the Ducati riders out, Factory Ducati, is very keen on keeping their place and keeping their momentum going, certainly in this series. And with Gibernau, that left a hole in the grid and a hole in the Ducati lineup. There were a lot of options that we, as fans, spectators, and the media, like to think they could have taken, and names were bandied about. I'm sure there were more than a few that were bandied about within Factory Ducati. But in the end, they chose to go with Alex Hoffman from the Pramac Dantin squad. The feeling was that he had experience on the Ducati, be it the GP5, and it being relatively close ties to Ducati, obviously, that he would make a good fit. So Hoffman it was on the number was the number 15, the number 66 this week in Ducati, alongside ailing new teammate Loris Capirossi. And taking Hoffman's place on the Premier Dutin bike was a gentleman named Ivan Silva. I will shortly give you some more information about him. I haven't caught that up. In fact, let's do a little bit of research about Hoffman, and I'll be right back. Due to the magic of internet radio shows, I've managed to quickly catch up, and I can fill you in here. Again, Alex Hoffman will be replacing Seta Gibernau while Gibernau nurses his wounds and takes care of that. Ivan Silva, who was racing for the Louis Dantin team in the extreme category of the Spanish Championship, will be taking over the duties of Alex Hoffman on the what was the number 66 bike. With our buddy Liam out there. Liam, I hope everything's going well for you. We'll talk about Liam in a bit. Alex, or even Ivan, had also done a race in the World Championship in the Superstock class this year in 2006. Now, Hoffman's going to be going over to race on the official Ducati bike, and we're talking Bridgestone tires. So things are going to be just a little bit different. Alex is clearly excited. He's happy. Getting a chance to do that is going to be something that will really give him an opportunity to shine. He's had a tough year of it, and it's got to be no fun being down there near the back of the pack quite often. So we'll have to see what he does. He's on a bike that is certainly capable, and this is his opportunity to make things look really good, and hopefully he can pull himself up. At the same time, pull up Ducati, Pramac Dantin, and Paolo Campinotti. So let's see what we can do there. Ivan Silva, of course, has got to be freaking out if you're running in the Formula Extreme in Spanish Championship and all of a sudden they say, hey, you know, you want to come do a GP race? You got to be thrilled. So depending upon how long it is for Gibernau, we'll have to see what happens with Hoffman up at the factory Ducati squad and Silva having his opportunity here. So like one of the things that you may have noticed me saying at the beginning of this podcast was that, or if I didn't, I intended to, was the information is coming in fast and furious. And it truly is. If you consider the amount of bikes and riders and people that have taken a beating, it's just amazing. And the shakeup that that's done to the points, to the riding situation and the riders and the bikes and who's where and what goes on is just amazing. I just reading something here, and I'll actually read it to you. This is from Seta Gibernau, and just was posted on MotoGP.com. And he's talking about the accident, of course, that occurred on Sunday morning at the first corner. He says, "Luckily I haven't, nor do I intend to watch the incident on television. I think that it is better that way. It was something that happens in races, and we have to say that we have been lucky to come away with only a fractured collarbone." Yeah, no kidding. You know, he's sitting there smiling in bed, and there's another picture where it looks like he's kind of passed out from whatever they've been giving him. Whatever it is, he doesn't look happy, and clearly, you know, that's something that you're just, you know, you're happy to get under your belt. So let's talk about Thursday. Technically, that's today here in the States. And I will tell you that here in California right now, we are suffering from, not suffering, it's the beginning of summer. Yesterday was the second day, or the first day of summer. Today is the second. And our temperatures right here, right now, outside are a little bit over 100 degrees. And that's, I don't know, 38 Celsius, something like that. However, I'm up in the second floor of my house recording this right now, and I'm guessing it's about 108 up here. So I'm working my butt off to get this podcast out, and I'm sitting here in a short sleeve shirt and with a wet bandana around my neck. So I'm telling you, I'm working hard for you folks. Anyway, come this morning, Thursday morning, remember the Austin race is on Saturday. So we get a day ahead for everything. So all your free practice, or your first free practice, second free practice occur on Thursday. Friday is FP3, qualifying, and the race is on Sunday morning. So this is a real good opportunity, actually, to talk to you about what's going on. because we usually do the podcast, late at night on Thursday or whenever we can get to it, maybe Friday morning, although that probably doesn't happen that often. And I'll usually be doing it on Thursday. So what happened? Well, in Assen, this is a shortened track. They knocked off a whole big lopping part of it. Amazing thing, a little side note here, as I was looking back, Assen was one of the tracks that they were running on in the first few years and have been for years, obviously, in GP. Way back when, the track itself was well over a 10-mile track, and it's been reduced quite a bit these days. And in fact, it seems like every year they're doing a reduction, and nobody seems to be big fans of it. In this particular year, they took out a big, long, fast section down at the far end to install what sounds like, not a car park, but a little entertainment center and a little museum of some sort and this and that. Actually, Kropotkin wrote a very kind of cool history of Assen and not history necessarily, but what they've done this year. And you can read that on rideon2.com or on his blog, which you can find through rideon2.com. So what happened this morning? Well, it was an interesting practice, first practice. It started off dry and it went, but it was kind of dry wet the whole time. And a few things happened that were quite unusual. The field was quite mixed up at the end, but the big thing that occurred during this particular practice, and if you haven't heard it, you're hearing it here first, is that Rossi took a wild tumble in a very fast portion of the track. He was pretty much hard on his left-hand side, making a turn through kind of an oddball semi-double apex corner, and the bike just spit him off at probably about 140, 50 miles an hour, fast enough to hurt. And it launched him, and it launched him in pretty much a flat trajectory for quite a period of time. And when Valentino came down, he didn't come down well. And he had more than a few tumbles, a couple of spins, a couple of good diggers with his head. And in the end, it took him quite a bit of time to get up. It took him quite a bit of time to decide to roll over onto the stretcher. And after that, rather valiantly, I'm trying to make a pun out of something that's not very funny. He managed to stand up and hobble off with the corner workers and medical personnel straight to the Clinica Mobile to visit with Dr. Costa. And the news wasn't so great, but it wasn't so bad either. It all depends upon how you look at it. At the examination there, and he later went to a hospital, it was determined that he did have fractures of some magnitude, though not known what, at the Mobile, with both his wrist and his ankle, and some unidentified some injuries to his chest and abdomen that needed to be examined. So, the carnage continues, and I have to mention not shortly thereafter, and I'm not sure if it was an FP1 or FP2, I believe it was an FP1, Tony Elias also went down and injured his shoulder, went off to the hospital as well. So, we've got two more great riders from the GP in the hospital. Rossi went to the hospital, got checked out, straight back to the track, back to Dr. Costa to talk to him. He was cleared to ride with basically sort of hairline-ish fractures to his wrist and ankle, but feeling strong, feeling like he wants to go. And so he was cleared, but he was cleared with, shall we say, some personal pain removal techniques, likely involving specialized chemicals. Specific injuries to him was a right wrist, they call it a pisiform bone fracture, a peroneal malleolus fragment detachment from his left ankle, tibio-tarsal joint, these are very technical things, and a closed chest trauma with a sharp sternal pain. So, that sound good? No. They did a CAT scan, and they took a look, and he indeed can't come out and managed to make it back for FP2. I'm not sure how he did it, but he did. And in fact, he went faster during FP2 than he did during FP1. Now remember, FP1, he was only out there for 6 laps, and it was lap 6 in which he went out with a 144. He managed to get down to a 139, however, and that was dry. But his partner, and well, we'll talk about that in a bit,
Anyway, a 139 is, it's definitely not there. He's 12th in the pack, but the fact that he was able to make it back out for FP2 says a lot. And today's Thursday, tomorrow's Friday. He's got another FP3 and he's got qualifying, so we'll see what he can do. We'll see what they can do overnight. A question was posed today. We got Caparossi out there, definitely beat to hell. We've got Melandri out there that's certainly not feeling a whole lot better. Now we've got Rossi out there. You got three quick guys that are definitely hurting. I will tell you that Elias did return to the track after the hospital. He was cleared to ride again, but he waved it off, and he headed straight back to Barcelona to start his rehab, because you got to remember, we got a lot of races coming up, stacking up real quickly. The question was posed. What do people think of racers racing? To not put it any more subtly, loaded up on painkillers, doing in practice, doing races. And it's an interesting question that has been asked a lot, because it's not like it's anything new. And frankly, it's this is an opinion piece, mind you, so feel free to give me grief about it, but it's my feelings. It's especially of top racers. You're not going to see this so much down at the club level, the national level, the club level, maybe the national level, but it's something that happens in the top tier of, frankly, every sport, as far as I know. If there's guys that are marginally hurt and they can still play and they are the stars of their team or the star, period, these guys are going to play or race hurt. There's no two ways about it. Now, that is not a choice you or I necessarily have to make, but it is something that happens, and it freaks me out a little bit, but I have respect for the guys that do it. Do I think that they pose a threat to the racers around them? I think, in particular, probably in Grand Prix, I have to say no, and I come back to the person that's probably going to prescribe, supply, and administer those exact same things that allow a racer to get back into the race are going to be the Claudio Costas of the world and his very talented assistants. And you got to remember that this Dr. Costa has been doing this for so long. And if you know anything of his history, and his history does extend very far back, he has been applying these kind of band-aids and pads and painkillers and all this stuff for so many years. Think of McDoohan with his legs recently separated after his horrible injury, still getting back on his bike and racing well. So these guys are true dedicated racers. They, for the most part, I think they understand their limits. They're not loopy when they're out there. They are just taking the pain away so that they can do what it is they love to do and do what it is they're paid to do, granted. So I don't think there's any hazard to the rest of the riders around them any more than there might be in any Grand Prix. Look what happened last Sunday, and I doubt a whole bunch of those guys were on painkillers. So there you go. That just telling you how I feel. So free practice one. After everything went through, the times were relatively slow. But I'll run down the feel for you, because it's quite interesting, and it says a lot about the new milkshake, or the new shake 'em up that is GP today, because things have changed a little bit, and they specifically have changed in the last week. Quick guy, Shinya Nakano. Woo! Hello, Kawasaki at the top. Number two, Hopper, John Hopkins again. Number three, Casey Stoner. Great, considering he had a great crash last week. Good to see him back out there. You got to remember, Stoner's crash last week made it two in a row. Last week's wasn't nearly as spectacular as the one he had the week before. Vermeulen on the other Suzuki. Suzuki's top two in the wet, dry conditions. Carlos Checa. Who? The Tech 3 Yamaha. Right up there. Hello. Right behind him, Colin Edwards. Okay. Marco Melandri. Beat up, beat down, number seven in the wet dry. Good for him. Pedrosa, another crasher from last week. Not too bad. Eighth position. Tomata. Tomato's kind of a big question mark right now. I think that there's a lot of people wondering about him. What's he doing? He had some fantastic runs last year. You haven't heard a lot about him. All you've seen is that big old neck sticking around, growing around corners, but usually at the back of the pack. Come on, Makoto. Let's see what you can do. Roberts Jr., middle of the pack, number 10. Rene DePugnier, next. 11th spot. Not too bad. Who haven't we talked about yet? We haven't talked about a few people. Number 12, Nikki Hayden. Number 13, right behind Hayden, Alex Hoffman on Gibernau's bike. Not too bad. Only about 2 seconds off the top. Not bad at all, considering he's usually four. Who haven't we talked about yet? Caparossi. Oh, Loris. God, you got to be hurting. And he's down there in 14th. Number 15, Ellison. Number 16, Rossi. Remember, wet, dry conditions. He only had six laps before he launched himself into a relatively stable orbit until he came down. Number 17, Cardoza. Number 18, Silva on Hoffman's bike. And number 19, Tony Elias. And again, I think he only had a total of four laps before he took his job, or took his header. So, wow, a single practice and two more guys seriously damaged. What are you going to say? The free practice number two, not so much later that afternoon. This was fully dry in the modified conditions. And so, unfortunately, I can't give you anything about, you know, fastest lap, circuit records, whatever, because, well, you change the circuit every year and the record's going to change every year. That makes one guy feel good for a year, but it doesn't tell you a whole lot about it. Free practice two, first fastest, Colin, and there was no drama as far as I know in this particular practice. So we'll just run it down and I'll see if I can shorten this up. Off the top, Colin Edwards, nice run, 138-144. This is going to be the shocker. Second up on the Tech 3 Yamaha, the other Yamaha, Carlos Checa. Holy cow. And frankly, he was only, he was just a little more than a tenth off of Edwards. So what's going on? Tell me you're not confused. Number three, Casey Stoner. Number four, Roberts Jr. Okay, last week wasn't a flash in the pan. Cutter wasn't a flash in the panic. It's clear that Team Roberts is coming to grips, no pun intended, with that bike. A strong Honda engine, a homespun chassis out of, you know, with Formula One lineage, and wow, a year ago. Number five, take a guess. Bet you won't get it right. Rene DePugnier. Whoa. We haven't mentioned Nakano yet, by the way, you'll notice, who was quick in FP. Number six, John Hopkins. Number seven, Christopher Mullen. Number eight, Makoto Tomita. Okay. Number nine, Shinya Nakano, who was first in the first practice with a time of 139.619. Well, he dropped a total of 1 second off that and knocked him all the way down to ninth. So, riding the limit, maybe in the wet dry, who knows. Number 10, Nikki Hayden. Number 11, Danny Pedrosa, the Repsol teammates. Number 12, came back and you know, who knows how he did. 23 laps, Valentino Rossi with a 139.458, which was quite a bit faster than his first session, but still, you know, was all the way down there in 12th. We'll see how tomorrow goes. Number 13, and by the way, his fast lap was on his lap, 23rd of 23 laps, so clearly struggling to get up to speed. Number 13, James Ellison, another Tech 3 bike. Number 14, Marco Melandri, another beat-up rider. Number 15, Alex Hoffman, sliding down the charts on the factory Ducati. Ran a 142 in that, and he ran a 142.48. Okay, in the wet dry. Free practice one, Hoffman ran a 142.48. Is that right? Let me see. Okay, I lied. No, sorry about that. He dropped about a second and a half to FP2. I was seeing things there. Number 16, Caparossi, still clearly beat up. Loris, take it easy, bud. Do what you can. Get out there if you can. Number 17, Cardoza, and number 18, Silva. Clearly off the pace on the Dantin bike. Like to see him come up. Like to see him rip Tony Elias out of that particular practice. So, what is everything going to bring? I wish I had a weather report for you. I'm not sure what the weather is planning on being this weekend. Regardless of what it's going to be, this is clearly looking like nothing that anybody could have predicted at the beginning of the season 2 weeks ago. If I need to make some choices for the RideOn2.com tipping this weekend, and I don't have a clue. Of course, I didn't have a clue last week, and I did really well. I'm still second in that. Come on over and join it. It's a lot of fun, RideOn2.com, the tipping competition, and a great forum as well. And so I don't know. Who do I pick? you know, the people that I had picked traditionally throughout this year to be in the top spots, are some of them are injured. I didn't always pick Valentino this year. There are some people that are, you know, number three with a bullet, guys that are running fast, at the beginning of races but aren't able to keep it together near the end of races, be that for chassis conditions with a particular tire combination or what. You know that those teams are taking this opportunity when they have the spotlight or a portion of the spotlight or their 15 minutes of fame to make the changes to their bike that will keep them more competitive. Any time that these top riders spend out away from their bikes is time that the other teams can make differences or changes to their bike that can get them that much closer to the top. And I think we're seeing that happen a little bit right now. And if and so you'll sit there and you'll think to yourself, okay, well, it's just because, you know, the top guys are out of there beat up. Well, that makes a difference in the short run, and that makes a difference in the long run, and allows people to catch back up. A minute away from being on the bike, on the track, is a minute your competitor has to catch up to you. Don't forget that. So, with that, let me step away from Assen and just get on to some generalized things and some information and what's going on. So, I can't help but mention that, or I should absolutely mention, since I talked about it last week, was the AMA races from Miller Motorsports Park in right outside of Salt Lake City, Utah. It was, that too, was some great racing. And in the midst of all of everything that's happened this week, I really don't want to forget about that, because the track itself, we knew it was going to be quite a track. We knew it was going to be very impressive. The one thing that was probably not the best about it was the surface itself. And as one of my coworkers, who is also a big racing fan, pointed out next to me this week, there's one thing that's very different about the way that Americans pave their tracks as opposed to Europeans. And it's a very, very, very good point. When you look at a European track, you see paving that is essentially edge to edge and very smooth. You don't see a lot of seams in the track. One thing that I see at all the most of American tracks, and is something that I think is probably hazardous, and it clearly is something the riders don't like, is a lot of seams, in the pavement, and it almost seems like the pavement is done in, you know, these 12-foot strips that are done for motorways and freeways and whatnot. Well, that's not the way to do it. So, those of you that have tracks out there, please try and figure out some way to pave edge to edge. The riders don't like it. It causes problems. You end up having to put in these concrete strips and patches, and nobody likes it. That being said, the track itself and the racing itself was fantastic. The Suzukis were back up front again, Mladen and Spies, but the racing didn't turn out that way all weekend. The Superbike race one, Jake Zemke, challenge, crashed, got run off the track by Matt Mladen. Matt freely admitted that after the race. He said he ran out of talent as opposed to running out of track. Ran Zemke off. Zemke, in his fight to come back, took quite a digger, got back on, and managed to work his way back up again. Race two, who was out there in front, but Ben Bostrom. Ben was riding brilliantly, and perhaps a little above his head or a little above the track, and Ben too took a digger. They both crashed, I might mention, in the same corner, it looked like to me. That race ended up getting red flagged with Spies with quite a commanding lead. Well, what happens when it gets red flagged? Matt Mladen gets a chance to catch back up again, and he was about 4 seconds down at the time. Mladen, Zemke, and Spies battled, but in the end, we had a Honda back on the podium. Jake Zemke, and Jake, congratulations to you. That was a heck of a run. You challenged both days, and it was fantastic. Super Sport, Super Stock, Formula Extreme were all really good races as well. So, the track, from a visual televised perspective, looks like currently like a cross between Qatar and one of those lovely, beautiful tracks in France where there's mountains and the whole nine yards in the background. So take that as you will. I thought the races were great. I enjoyed watching them. Those mixed in with the Grand Prix races made for a really exciting weekend. And I must say that even with everything that happened this weekend, I still had a great weekend as a spectator, whatever that is, and also as just a general member of the viewing public. So that was great. USGP plans. I am, as I said last week, I'm totally locked in. I'm making more plans for that and plans to meet with folks. Those of, there have been some folks that have sent in some emails to me, and keep those cards and letters and emails coming. Thanks for the encouragement. Nobody seemed to hate me last week. Maybe some of you remember me from before. I'm doing my best, and I'm trying to get all this figured out. I will mention that if you're listening to this, clearly you're on the feed. You're using the feed because the PHP, the stuff, technical geek stuff here, the stuff that actually shows the race on the MotoGPOD.com website is kind of messed up right now. So the feed is feeding everybody. That's a large majority of our listeners, but I got to get that taken care of quick style. Grand Prix, I said, I do have plans for that. I am going to be camping, but I am now going to be camping in a four, or I think a six-wheeled home. So I'll have some of the luxuries, which includes my laptop and the capability of recording podcasts from there. Woo-woo! So you'll get some on-site stuff, and I'll actually be doing some semi-live from the track, maybe during free practice. We'll see how that goes. That's going to be a little sketch. I've got responsibilities to take care of there as a corner worker. On another note, right now, your mail that goes to MotoGPOD at MotoGPOD.com is currently forwarded to both Bob and myself, which is really cool because I get to see the sentiments that you send to Bob, and some of you folks are sending some really cool stuff to that address, you know, wishing Bob well in his deployment with the U.S. Naval Reserve. Some very interesting stuff that I've been reading from some of you that's really cool, some of you folks with some great experience. And again, if you want to write to both of us, that's great, MotoGPOD at MotoGPOD.com. If you want to write directly to Bob, it's Bob, B-O-B, at MotoGPOD.com. If you want to write to me, Jim Race, directly, you can get me at race at MotoGPOD.com. And I'll add those addresses in. I will probably put in some links to the pictures of the amazing crash, and there were some great ones also of Miller Motorsports Park. And once again, I thank you for downloading this. Oh, a couple other things I want to mention. I made some big mistakes. Bad novice podcaster late last week and early this week. I had an opportunity to interview Alex Hoffman, albeit through email and perhaps in a voice thing last week, and I wasn't able to follow up. Additionally, and this was my big flaw, and Chuck, if you're out there, all my fault. I had an opportunity on Monday to interview Chuck Axlin, and I unfortunately had to let it fall through. My problem, not his, as I'm learning and as Bob has mentioned before, our general work and our real work takes precedence over this because this is a hobby and that's what pays the bills and lets us have these computers to do this kind of thing. So, Chuck, I will get to you. I desperately wish I could have talked to you on Monday, especially after the fantastic performance of Team Roberts over this last weekend, and especially given that you guys are pulling it out again today. So with that, I bid you adieu, and I bid all of you folks thanks for downloading it, and please send me some feedback, any questions you'd like to hear, or anything you'd like me to answer, race at MotoGPOD.com, and enjoy the weekend of racing. Oh, by the way, there's a race, a World Superbike race this weekend, too. What can I do? There's too much going on. I have no idea what's going on. All I know is that I'll be here again, hopefully Tuesday, for a wrap-up, if not next Thursday before the next race. Thanks, and we'll talk to you soon.
MotoGP is a trademark of Dorna Sports SL. The MotoGPOD podcast and MotoGPOD.com are not affiliated with Dorna Sports SL. All other trademarks are the property of their respective owners. MotoGPOD isn't affiliated with any of them.